Thanks so much for joining us today on WPR News. Larry Mueller here, and we're starting the show by talking with you about foster parenting. Our guest, Oriana Carey, is CEO of the Coalition for Children, Youth, and Families, a statewide organization based in West Allis. And as we talk with Oriana, I hope you'll join in. Have you been a foster parent? Are you thinking of becoming a foster parent? Maybe you were a child with foster parents. Give a call. The number is 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@WPR.org. That's talk@WPR.org. Oriana Carey, welcome. Thank you for taking time to be with us today.
Well, thank you, Larry. I really appreciate the opportunity to talk with you more about this topic. So thanks for having me.
Well, let's start by talking about foster care, maybe a definition. I mean, I think we all have a sort of a general notion, but is there some sort of official definition of foster care or foster parenting?
Sure. So officially, I guess what if you want to say official, what we say is that, the definition, foster care is intended to be temporary care for children who cannot live with their parents because of safety concerns. Children who are in foster care can be living with relatives. They can be living with people that are like relatives, or often what I think we understand being non-relative foster parents or people who choose to become a foster parent, get licensed, trained, etc.
Yeah. So the responsibility of a foster parent, I mean, it's being the parent in a way, isn't it?
Yeah. So I think, when we look at that, we can go down your typical list of things like, welcoming a child in your home, having things they need, a place to stay, bedroom, making sure that, they're getting to medical or mental health appointments they need, making sure to the degree possible, we like to keep kids within their same school setting, and working through the various appointments often that end up being a part of children who end up as part of our system. What I think is not always as clearly understood, and what is sometimes, and we're trying to spend more and more time with this, with families in general, is that a really big responsibility is keeping children connected to their parents, which means building a relationship with people that you might not naturally have considered you build a relationship for. And that's important because anybody who has any experience with some kind of a shared parenting relationship knows that youth don't want to be between the adults, and if our main goal is for somebody to be reunified and going back home, we can't have months and years of, relationship that's broken apart. So to the degree possible, how can we keep that relationship and that connection with their family intact?
Yeah, I went online to your website, which was, I found it very interesting. Maybe you could talk about the mission of the Coalition for Children, Youth, and Families and how you fit in.
Yeah, so where do we fit in, in this whole complex ecosystem is what we like to say of navigating these systems of care. So the Coalition is an independent nonprofit with over a 40-year history of working alongside families who have been involved in caring for a relative, adoption, foster care.
and helping them navigate that complexity. You know, so it can be simple things like, how do I become a foster parent? What happens around adoption? You know, I just had my grandchild placed with me. These simple things, or to incredibly more complex issues where I need to find a trauma-informed therapist. I'm really having difficulty in my house. So to do that mission, we have people who answer the phone. We write an incredible amount of content. You said you were on one of our websites. Yeah,
really interesting.
We provide training, live webinars monthly, and then all that content is accessible via recording or a learning management system we have. Our team helps, counties consider their recruitment efforts. We advocate both at, state, local level, with our legislature, things that we see, or at least, trying to just provide a sort of a balanced perspective on all the issues involved.
The coalition, as you said, has been around for a while. Have there been changes over time in the way we look at foster care?
Well, yeah. I mean, really, when we, the roots of this organization, began because children were lingering in foster care. And that was, mid-80s timeline. Well, when you look at that, part of it is there was a belief once we had a belief that, if you were a foster parent, you shouldn't develop too much of a relationship with this child. You could not be the potential adoptive resource. You were just trying to, and we know that's just not possible. And then I think, nationally, statewide, historically, in the 90s, there was a big piece of legislation that put in timelines of how long, it was called the Adoption and Safe Families Act, how long children could spend in the foster care system before child welfare needed to start being really clear about what was going to be the end game. If reunification wasn't going to happen, were we talking about adoption? And what happened in there is you built this really big influx of, children moving into adoption quite rapidly. And I think what is starting to show as people, we like to say with lived experience, share their voice of their experiences, that there may have been some unintended consequences of some of that. Some breaking of sibling relationships, breaking of family relationships, families not having enough support and preparation for helping support children who've experienced trauma and who need extra support. And we're still catching up with that today. In 2018, the federal government once again looked at everything and said, and what's funny is that some of this has always been the goal. Like I said, always the goal has been reunification. So, in 2018, we said we better be taking a stronger look at this part about keeping families out of our system to begin with, that we're creating more harm. We're creating another trauma for a child. And so what can we do? And part of that impetus is that when we look at data, we see a really large number of children and teens coming into our system for neglect versus what I think the public might think, traditionally, this really abusive, physically or sexually abusive situation happened. Those numbers are not necessarily rising. It's a misunderstanding in the area of neglect. And I think it's a very complex challenge for our communities to figure out, okay, is this, what's really going on here? How do we help with affordable housing and jobs and enough access to mental health and substance abuse so that we don't have to keep pulling families apart?
Yeah, and there is a trend, if I'm not mistaken, away from non-relative foster care to placing kids with relatives.
Yes, yes, that has. I mean, you know, this is another piece of, you know, there's a whole piece of relatives caring for children in this country, some being directly involved with our child welfare system, and some, as many of us might know, relatives down the street that are caring for someone in their family, and they may not have ever gotten involved with our child welfare system. But specifically within our system, we want to have kids stay with people they know. You know, we've begun to understand that separation, by going in with people you don't have a previous relationship with, creates a lot of stress and anxiety, another trauma in their life. Whereas when I'm with a relative, some of that might be mitigated. However, you know, we don't necessarily, we still, whether it's relatives, non-relatives, adoptive, foster, whatever you're talking about, we are struggling both as a state and nationally to find enough supports for people to care for children who have complex needs.
Yeah. And there are, I mean, there are several thousand. I saw one number, something like 8,000 children in foster care. Is that close or here in Wisconsin?
Yes. So I just, before we got on here, I just looked at, you know, the Wisconsin Department of Children and Families has a dashboard where they keep, you know, just-in-time data. So as of today, their number is 6,005 children. But, you know, that's a point-in-time piece.
Yeah.
So, you know, what we know is it is trending down because our state is working really hard at the local level of trying to put other supports in place so that we don't have to get involved in the lives of children and families where we don't belong.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. If you're going to be a foster parent, I mean, there's a program, and I was online, it takes, you can get some training, or you need to get training to become one.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, in Wisconsin, there are a couple different paths that people usually take. You know, each one of our local county organizations that manage child welfare for that particular county license foster parents. We also have private agencies who work either under contract with that county or are providing what is called treatment foster care, a higher level of foster care, that license. And our tribal nations also license foster parents. Typically, they are going to be looking for people with a background, you know, having Native American heritage and have you. So we talk to people about some of those general pieces, like help direct them, you know. So, for example, if somebody talks to one of my team today and they live in Washington County, let's just say that, you know, we're going to connect them. We're going to give them an information packet. We're going to connect them. We're going to ask them if they want to talk directly to the person in Washington County that does that work. And then we're going to be available for them to call back with questions. Typically, then what happens is, depending on the size of the county, you know, in Wisconsin, we have a diverse range.
Sure.
So, you know, some might just be a one-on-one conversation. Some might send people to what are called an information meeting to talk more about foster care within their agency. And then, yes, there are levels, there's a base level of training that people have to have. Again, sort of that, how you're coming in to provide care. Some of those relatives that I talked about, Some choose to take that, you know, tier one, tier two of foster parent licensing because, you know, reimbursement and some of the other pieces that are involved. And then people have to take the beginning training that is offered by the state of Wisconsin, regulated on what those core courses. And then within every 2 years, based on the type of license you have, there's more training that you have to take. It's called ongoing training. And the coalition under contract with the Department of Children and Families, which is called the Wisconsin Family Connection Center, has those trainings I talked about. A lot of foster parents, a lot of relatives, adoptive parents who are needing or wanting more of that education are the ones that take those trainings we offer each month.
Oriana Carey, our guest today, is CEO of the Coalition for Children, Youth, and Families, a statewide organization based in West Allis, talking about foster parenting. Questions for her? Maybe you've got an experience to share, or maybe just have a general question about becoming a foster parent. I hope you'll join in. Number to call, 800-642-1234, or you could email us to talk@WPR.org. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. Taking a look at foster parenting today with our guest Oriana Carey from the Coalition for Children, Youth, and Families. And I hope you'll join in as we move along today. Questions or maybe an experience to share? The number is 800-642-1234. Email to talk@WPR.org. And just to note, at noon today, we're taking a look at saving for retirement. But right now, we're talking fostering, becoming a foster parent. You know, I'm going back here in time a little bit, maybe 30 years ago when I bought my first house. Right across the street was a family. They were fostering a really nice young child, a young kid. And one Saturday, I looked out and he was sitting on the porch. And I didn't pay any attention to it on his porch across the street. And then I happened to go out to mow the lawn, I think. And he was, this is several hours later, and he's still sitting on the porch. And another day or two later, I ran into the foster parent, and I said, gee, he was just sitting out there a long time. And she said, well, he was waiting for his mother to come. She was supposed to come, and she never did come. And he sat there many, many hours waiting, And I asked her how she handled it, and I don't recall exactly what she said, but I hope she said something like what you had on your website for help for people. Yeah, in that specific situation, I thought it was close to what she said, that's kind of one of the challenges, I guess, when you're a foster parent.
Yeah. So, wow. Let me try to unpack some of that. You know, yes, we do have times where, you know, youth in care are waiting. And thank you, Larry, for pointing that out, because it's back to my original point of like, whatever we might think of somebody's family or the choices they made, for kids, that connection is always there. And, you know, why somebody might wait can be as unique to that situation. You know, what we do know is that, you know, it's also very challenging and scary for that mom, you know?
Yeah.
Does this young person remember me anymore? Or depending on what happened, you know, when we're talking about things with mental health, substance abuse, either somebody's having a situation that maybe happened that they're having a relapse, or they're still working through some of the shame and some of the difficult pieces they're feeling, you know? So, yeah, then I'm just bringing up to you earlier in this conversation, like, and then we want foster parents to do this and not be typical humans that want to be mad on behalf of that child or sad or want to do something about that. That's a human reaction, right? Like, oh my goodness, I sat here and let this person go through pain. I hope what happened and what you remembered is, you know, the families we know who have successfully helped kids and their parents navigate this is that they just honor that piece. You know, they check in with kids and youth and they see what they immediately need in that moment. And sometimes the person needs space. Sometimes the outcome, you know, can be that there's some challenging emotions and behaviors behind that. And I think for, again, the people who do this very successfully have learned to be incredibly flexible and, you know, emotionally regulated themselves. Because, you know, another person doesn't need now another person having an emotional reaction to my emotional reaction, right? And so that's a lot of the training emphasis that, you know, goes into this is, you know, talking about trauma, trauma-informed care, understanding how someone who's experiencing that level of disappointment, loss, and separation and how they might react to that.
Yeah. And not blaming or running down the parent that's involved was one thing that I noted. You don't want to put an artificial barrier between the child and the actual parent.
Yeah, and their parent, yes. And, you know, so that's another reason where, you know, the Coalition, the Wisconsin Family Connection Center, our other agency, Catholic Charities of La Crosse, runs, you know, helps cooperate that with us. You know, we're all here to hear, talk about, you know, provide training, provide support groups, connect people to other families like them. Our team specifically here, there's more of us now that I like to say have been a foster and or adoptive parent than there's those of us who have not.
Yeah.
We have several staff here. And so, you know, we're available because that, while we can say, here's how you should act, you know, human beings are not robots. They need somebody else to connect with and say, wow, this happened. Here's how I handled it. Did I handle it right? But I'm having all kinds of emotions. I don't know what to do. And, you know, our team here is here to normalize and help guide people through those challenging, complex situations.
What are, in your mind, what are the benefits of being a foster? What do you get out of being a foster parent? What are the benefits of being a foster parent?
You know, what families tell us and people who work with me, you know, it's this amazing, you know, journey towards seeing that you can do more than you really thought you had, you know, you were able to. Families who have children, you know, birth children of their own will say that they feel that their kids have developed more empathy and understanding and compassion. I always say that if you work really well, and again, this is through the voices of families we know, is that your circle of people grows. Your circle of people grows. And I think, you know, that myth of there's always been these sayings like, I can't foster because I don't want to give them back or it would hurt too much. Well, that's why we're trying now to work through those pieces of, you know, make that connection with the whole the child's family, the whole pieces of that child, and let somebody build that trusting relationship with you so that you are a lifelong resource. And what many families also know is that whether it's for a short time or for a longer period of time, you know, I'm having an impact that I might not know till later, you know, in life.
It's got to be emotionally fulfilling.
It really can be, because you're pushing, you know, you're giving back in a way that doesn't have like these big accolades in life, right? Mm-hmm. You know, if we can help keep families together, if we can help connect children and help them have vital connections in life, you know, we have a more thriving workforce in the future, thriving communities. These are the things that I often talk about, you know, with people who are not necessarily directly fostering.
I want to go to Bradley in Whitewater and hear Bradley's experiences. Thank you for calling, Bradley.
Yes, hello. So my wife and I decided to have a family through fostering. And we started with we went through the classes and brought two brothers into our home. And then it was 11 months later, their mother had another child, which we brought home from the hospital day two, a little girl. And then 4 years after that, there was a fourth child that the same mother had. And we also brought that daughter home from the hospital day two. So it was quite a whirlwind. And a couple things that I want to point out. First of all, the individuals that did the training for us to be foster parents, they did an amazing job. They really tried to prepare us. But I will say this, there's no such thing as being prepared enough, because you know, they say over and over again, every family is different. Every child is different. It's very, very true. You don't know how big your support system needs to be until you're kind of in the middle of it. So however big your support system is, think about doubling it, because that's the kind of support that you're going to need, just because emotionally, it's a roller coaster. There are wonderful rewards, but there are immense challenges that nobody can foresee that come along. So I just, like, people ask me all the time, they know my experiences, my wife and I, and they'll be like, oh, well, I've thought about that. That's fine. You can think about it, but you need to really know what you're getting in for, and you need to be prepared for, like, for you to go to counseling as well, because there's probably a lot of stuff that you need to deal with as, here's my expectations of what I think it's going to be to be a parent. You throw about half of that out the window, because it's a very different situation than anybody else's family.
Mm. And you adopted the children?
We did. We were able to adopt all four kiddos, and we were quite fortunate. They all have the same mom, and to be able to keep them together, we take a lot of pride in the fact that we were able to keep that sibling group together to this day. And there, like I said, there's been amazing joy that has come with that's how we grew our family. But we've got two of the kiddos that have special needs and some learning disabilities, and there's still some struggles. The other piece I wanted to bring up is, don't be afraid. I mean, you're going to want to be an advocate for these kids, especially in the school system. Don't be afraid to kind of push back if the school system is not meeting your expectations. And don't be afraid to go out and get a private diagnosis, like a neuropsych from a doctor, because oftentimes the school systems, even if they do a great job, they don't have the resources to give a full diagnosis like the medical professionals do.
Bradley, thank you so much for calling. I really appreciate, well, what you did, but also for calling and giving us your perspective. And Oriana, comments on Bradley's
experience. Well, I want to first start by saying exactly what you just said, Larry. I want to thank Bradley for, you know, calling in, because, you know, there's been part of me through part of this interview are like, oh, I should have had one of my other team members. But so thank you, Bradley. Yeah, I think a lot of the pieces that cross over in some of what Bradley's talking about are some of the immense challenges that we have right now in children's mental health. You know, not only here in Wisconsin, but across the country, you know, and it is difficult for any parent who is navigating our school systems when we need additional things in place. And I would also comment that, you know, I have several staff who have played both roles, right? They've fostered, adopted, they've also been teachers. And it's complex. That's a whole, we could do a whole show on, you know, children's mental health and some of our school issues. But I appreciate so much, Bradley, that you called in and said, yeah, there's this advocacy role that, you know, you have to play and you have to be willing to speak up. You know, in some situations where it's not like Bradley's, where, you know, they've adopted, but where parents are still involved, another big piece that happens with foster parents is helping empower those parents in school settings. That is really, really difficult. And for many of our birth parents, they didn't have the best experience with schools. And now they need to, you know, all those pieces. And many of our families that engage with us will say, you know, I had to help mom and dad as much as I had to help kids understand, you know, what they needed to have a successful education. And it is difficult. It is difficult for all of us, our school systems as well, who are just trying to do the best they can. And, you know, it's always been a challenge in our population. And now, you know, we know that children's mental health overall is a big concern in this state. And, you know, we work as an organization, for example, we try to work really closely with those systems like the Office of Children's Mental Health here in Wisconsin.
Thank you again, Bradley. Appreciate it very much. Someone else is wondering, is there a financial role or part of this if you're foster parenting? Does the state or somebody or the Fed provide some financial support to help you with that task?
Yeah, so I'm glad that you asked that as well, Larry. Yes, there are, you know, there is a monthly stipend that goes to families based on two things, the level of their license, you know, and their and how that was rated up in the front end, as well as the difficulty of needs of the child or teen that's placed with them. And there are formulas that go into all of that work. What I will say is often, regardless of how high some people might think that payment is, it often can fall short for some families when people have lots and lots of extra needs. So it is a balance, and you know, so yes, there is support and help, and no, I do not believe people get rich off of foster care.
No. It didn't look like it to me anyway. I food and clothing and everything else, it adds up in a hurry.
Yeah.
It adds up in a hurry. Someone else wondered, what happens when the kids are sort of age out?
Mm. Right. And so that is that other, you know, really difficult piece of what happens, you know, when in our systems of care. In that, and what that term means is that in Wisconsin, you know, somebody is under the care of the state through age 18, possibly 19, where there are some special circumstances. And then, you know, if you were not adopted or a guardianship, or, you know, you can be left pretty much primarily on your own. you know, and to navigate difficult things. Now, let's think about that for a minute. You know, many people right now, I'm one of them. I have a 20-year-old living still with me.
Yeah.
You know, many of us have that happening. But think about being 18 and alone and trying to figure out and find health insurance and housing and all the things you need right now. And even for youth that are able to get into some post-secondary ed, think about holidays and times when you don't have people to go back to. So that can be a very lonely place. There are services in place in Wisconsin to help mitigate all of that. But really, what we really want is we want youth to have people that are connected for them lifelong, regardless.
Yeah, I wonder. I mean, you gave your case there of, you know, you've still got what was the foster kid still there with you, and I hope I hope that can be the case for a lot of these youngsters.
Yeah. Well, it's difficult for the youth, and let me clarify, my child is is my birth child, I'm trying to paint the picture that many of us in our family situations, even with kids outside of foster care, kids are staying at home a lot longer.
Yeah.
And think about what we're expecting of these youth who've experienced trauma and separation and a lot of the other things. I think the challenge is, when you're 18 and you've had disappointment over disappointment, you don't want to hang out with many of us anymore. You know, we're a disappointing bunch, I think, at times for those youth.
Oh, man. Oriana Carey, CEO of the Coalition for Children, Youth, and Families, talking with her today about foster care, and invite you to join in again. Maybe you've got an experience to share, or maybe a question. The number is 800-642-1234, or you could email us to talk@WPR.org. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. We're taking a look at foster care for children in our state today, and an organization that is helping a lot in this fostering area is the Coalition for Children, Youth, and Families, a statewide organization based in West Allis. Oriana Carey is the CEO and is our guest today. And if you have a question, I hope you'll join in at 800-642-1234. Or email to talk@WPR.org. Oriana, is there an average length of stay in foster care? I imagine it's all over the place, but.
Yeah, there, you know, it is kind of, as you just said, what our state systems look at is, how do we keep that length of stay short and reasonable for the individual case involved? You know, Adoption and Safe Families Act that I mentioned earlier originally was looking at 12 to 18 months. You know, a decision on this permanency needed to happen. And while all of that is still the case, the reality of the situation is, when you're talking about something like somebody recovering from substance use and that sort of thing, there are advocates in that domain that would say that timeline is too short. So often there is a tension between folks who say children can't be lingering forever, advocates for the parents. And what we're trying to do right now is take a look at it from a whole family approach, and how can we shorten those time frames, have children reunited with their families, and not just reunited, but that, you know, they all have the supports in place they need to be successful and thrive.
I'm wondering how often the hope is, I would guess, that they go back, the child goes back to its birth family after a stay in foster care. What needs to happen for children to be placed back with their families?
Well, once somebody is involved in our child welfare system, what I think a lot of folks don't understand, while there are social workers involved, this system is taken care of by legal or laws, a legal system behind that. So there are a whole lot of folks involved. The social workers involved have an incredibly important job in trying to help that family get all the services and things they need to be able to be reunited. They also have to give that information on to the lawyers and judge and all those people involved. And ultimately, a judge needs to look at the case and say, yep, you have, they're called meet the conditions for return home. And, you know, those are very specific to the case. You know, some of the standard things are things like taking a parenting class, resolving the issues that created the risk to begin with, a whole host of things. And what we're trying to look at now is that list of conditions more challenging for somebody to achieve than what we would expect of those of us who have never been involved?
Yeah.
You know, I think that for some of us who've never been involved in child welfare, if we had to meet some of those conditions, we might, and keep a job, right? Yeah. So work and find transportation and sustainable housing and those sorts of things, we might be challenged as well.
What happens if the child is unable to return to their birth family? Then,
well, in many cases, you know, so first of all, I would say, and I want to make sure we're clear that in Wisconsin, you know, we have a reunification percentage that, you know, hovers around 60%, sometimes lower, sometimes higher. You know, we're doing a really good job of, you know, making that happen. In many of the cases that that can't happen, then we're talking about either doing the next legal step, which is a guardianship with a relative, or it could even be with that foster parent, you know, saying that I'm going to be the legal guardian, or as you heard Bradley speak about earlier, you know, the court case of terminating somebody's parental rights and moving towards adoption.
So those are the options. Let's take a look at the what it takes to be a foster parent. And I mean, eligibility here, is there, the age range is pretty broad, if I'm not mistaken, yep. As an example.
Yep, the age range is broad, starting at 21. There are, so when I started to talk about that process in the beginning, you know, about getting connected with one of those agencies that license foster parents, you know, there are many steps they're going to take. There's application processes. They're going to do what's called a home study, meaning they're going to interview you and your partner and other folks in the home. They're going to look at how you work as a family, what your home is laid out as. They're going to look, do you have enough square footage and space and, you know, ability to do this. They're going to run criminal background checks on you, and they're going to look at all of the things, you know, in your history, you know, for, you know, to see if all of those things measure up. And really, most importantly, really talk to people about their intention, their motivation. And as Bradley said, you know, we sit at tables often throughout the state and we try to talk about, oh, how can we prepare for this? Or how can we sit, you know, and some of it is just like all parenting. Until you are in the thick of stuff, you know, it's really hard to know. And that's why organizations like ours is so vital, because people need, like, oh, wow, that thing that you said was going to happen is happening. you know, and what's nice about our organization is that, yes, people can call back to the county agency and they spend a lot of time with their licensing staff. You know, but sometimes those folks are really have very high workloads. And B, sometimes I don't want to talk to that person because I don't want them to judge me, you know, and the team here is more like, you know, okay, here's what you can expect. This is what might happen. Ooh, that's really challenging and unique. Or we think you should call back to your licensing worker because that's not a problem, you know, something we can answer.
So, another question relates to children that are already in your home. You already have children.
Mm-hmm.
How do you talk with them about becoming a foster family?
Yeah, I would say that, again, it should be, you know, and I hate to use shoulds. It's best to have a conversation of as a family to the degree that's possible. And being aware of that, because it is going to change the dynamics in your home and, you know, and your availability and what your intentions are. What's really, really important is that to the degree possible, we create an environment in your home where the children coming in don't feel like they have some kind of secondary class status or, you know, something like that. These are things we've heard from youth, that in certain situations, not all, but in some homes, they felt like they were not as good as. And, you know, so how are you going to provide individual care while treating everybody as an active member of that family? So, you know, that's a lot of what people have to work through day in and day out with, you know, all the children in their home in that kind of special, unique family situation. But what I've said before is that many folks find that, you know, their kids will, you know, adapt, help, you know, that they also build connections with kids that come into the home, and it can sometimes be really, you know, tough on them when that gets broken up as well. So it's usually, we hear a lot more positive stories than we hear any really horrible situations, but I'm sure if we sat on here long enough, Larry, somebody would find one.
I would think the hardest. I would think the hardest thing for if I was a foster parent and had spent months and, you know, a lot of time, the hardest thing for me would be to say goodbye.
Yeah.
You'd feel good if the person, if the youngster was going back, but there'd be a big lump in my throat. I'm pretty sure of that, because there would be a lot of positive experiences I would probably be drawing on. And I want to thank you so much, Oriana. Your Coalition for Children, Youth, and Families has a great website. We'll post it up on our today's program at WPR.org/Larry, so people can link it. But if you just type in Coalition for Children, Youth, and Families, you're going to find a lot of really good information that is going to help you make the decision, perhaps, to become a foster parent. Oriana, thank you for what you do, and thank you for being with us today.
Well, thank you, Larry, for having me on this show, and thank you for all your listeners who are tuning in. Have a great day.
Oriana Carey is CEO of the Coalition for Children, Youth, and Families. Take a look at their website. It's really fascinating and interesting. Coming up, we're going to talk about investing for retirement. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News.